an entire sea of water can't sink a ship unless it gets inside the ship. Similarly, the negativity of the world can't put you down unless you allow it to get inside you. Okay? And we'll start off with a couple of adventurous things. Took my vehicle in today over at GMC, and I sat and waited on it this time to get some oil changed and all that. And anyhow, there's a couple that was in there, and I don't know what they weren't waiting on mechanical, so I guess they had bought a new vehicle, and they was doing something to it or something. But anyhow, and they had this little girl, and she reminded me of Mika, round face and the blondish hair and everything, and she was real quiet, very well behaved. And anyhow, I got up and was moving around, and I came back by, and I saw that bored look. All parents know, grandparents know, they see that bored look on their child or their grandchild. So I just walked up there, pushing my scooter along, and I just stopped right in front of her. I'm not looking at dad or mom. I'm just looking at her. And she was just sitting there, bored look. And then all of a sudden she looks up at me. And she sits back, and she peels her eyes to mom and dad. They wasn't saying a thing because I'm looking at her directly. I said, hi. She said, hi. I put my hand out, and she put her hand. I shook her hand. I said, I'm Jim. What's your name? Lillian. It's been a long time since I've heard Lillian on one of the youngsters. A beautiful name. And it really suited her. And I said, Lillian, I really like that name. That's great. So what are you, about 8, 9 years old? 9. I said, oh, you're the age of my youngest grandson. And so we had our own conversation story going a little bit. Mom and dad have yet to say a thing. They both are turned looking at her on how she's going to respond to me, okay? So anyhow, so we talked a little bit, and I told her, I said, I know you were bored. You did. I said, you had the bored look. I did, and she's just shocked. I said, yeah, I've seen it with my grandson before. He gets that bored look. But sometimes, as you have to go with your parents or maybe some other friends or something, and you have to tag along not doing what you really would like to do, and you get bored. We've all went through that. I went through that from when I was a child. We all do that. So I want you to think about trying this next time. When you really get bored, type thing, or somebody's around you and they're kind of grumpy, just look at them and you just smile from ear to ear. Because they're going to wonder, first thing, your mom and dad's going to wonder what you've been doing. But the other thing is, I bet you that they will smile back at you. And you always try that and see if that'll help out some. And as soon as I said, she just smiled real big. She said, thank you. But anyhow, that was my take there on that situation today. But as Margie knows, we're driving in, and she said, well, who'd you meet at the waiting room at the dealership today? So I told her about Lillian. So I don't know mom and dad's name, but I know Lillian now. Anyhow, next thing, all these years, I have never heard this, and it caught me, and I thought, this is interesting. Never even thought about it. Had this older lady coming in, and she can be really a talker. Maybe match Martha back here, okay? But I do this, and I've done it for years with people. If they're coming in the afternoon, sometimes I'll ask somebody, well, what's for supper? And I do that on purpose, because I ask questions on purpose like that to get their mind thinking about whatever I asked them and get their mind off the aches and pains that they have in their body. It's a transfer there in the mind with that. So I've done that for years. And so I asked this lady, And I've done this question too. You may think it's horrible. I said, what? I used to do, what's your favorite food? And I still do that some, but I said, if you had, it was your last meal, and most patients will say real quick, you mean like if I was on death row? I said, if you want to be on death row, I guess think of it that way. But if it's your last meal, what would you decide that you would want to eat for your last meal? All the type of foods you've eaten in your life, what would you like to eat? And I have heard everything you can imagine type of foods people would say. This lady's response, without really hesitating, she said, I would want to eat what Christ ate at the Last Supper before his crucifixion. And I thought that blew me. I have never, ever had someone respond like that. Now, she's not a Christian like us. She goes to some church, all that type of stuff. And then she went on to say, I told her, well, that's really interesting, because we don't really have a firm account of what he ate, that to my knowledge. And she said, well, you know, they ate some kind of bread, and they had water and or wine or something, the other things. But the Jewish people have different things that they fix that other people don't. And she said, most likely, if there was meat, it was probably mutton, because they did eat a lot of sheep, and probably cabrito too. But and then she got to tell me that for Easter, now Easter Sunday, a group of ladies from wherever she goes to church, they had made reservations at a Jewish restaurant somewhere in the downtown Houston area that was going to be open on Easter, and they went there and had lunch like the Jews would eat. And they thought, well, at least that'd be very similar to something that Christ might eat. And she said, boy, the menu was really, we had two waitresses over trying to explain what these foods were by the names. But she said, it was all very good. But I thought I'm going to throw out at y'all, sometimes we get kind of hung up in our world, in Christianity, that we don't think a little bit out beyond. And but what did Christ eat, you know? So kind of food for thought here today before we get started. Now, with that aside, and I'm not taking any questions on what they ordered because I couldn't pronounce them, and she was having a hard time pronouncing. The only thing I got out of it was masa soup. Has little meatballs and a really thick type of soup or broth type of deal, she said. And she said, it was very tasty. I could have made my whole meal just on that. And but anyhow, now, we're going to move on from last week. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Proverbs 27:17. Think about that. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. That's the reason why the disciples went out singular, by themselves. They usually went out in pairs. Two or three would go out when they were out converting people and talking to people about Christ, because two always work out better than just one. The first people you will share your zeal with are your what? I heard one. Family, what? Yeah. Usually the first ones are family and friends, okay, on that situation. By helping them develop a lifelong zeal, your bond will become deeper, and you'll be a source of encouragement and accountability for each other. And that's the reason why we sharpen each other, because we then become accountable to each other, okay? And when you're accountable for each other, you're going to tend to do what? You're going to tend to be what? better than if you were alone. Okay? And also, if you're not alone, it helps the other person, will help keep the negative thoughts that Satan will throw out at us away, and we'll stay more positive and on track for Christ. Okay, just thoughts here. Jesus found this kind of friendship in Lazarus and Mary and Martha. We know that. And we know there's probably several times they stopped, other disciples stopped at their home. Where they were located, they were on a kind of a path when they were going out teaching others and other towns around. So their home was really full of more of zeal, because they're talking about Christianity. They're talking about the way. That's what they were calling themselves at the very beginning. So they were all hyped up on this, and which is a great for Christ, and it's great for his disciples' situation, because there's like a safe haven they could go and recharge. What is church? What is church right here? It's people. Family, brothers, sisters, Christ, family and God. But when we come here and meet, whether it's this building or out here under these oak trees or none of the cypress out there. Cypress have too much things that fall out of cypress. Little bugs and worms fall out of cypress. I don't like those cypress out there. But anyhow, what are we doing? We're recharging each other. This is our safe haven. We come and we get charged again for the rest of the week. And then we have the first day of the week. And we get charged even more then. Hopefully, we're going to go through, I guess, thoughts put together that and we'll learn to bring a greater zeal to your closest relationships and some of the strongest families in the Bible we're going to talk about. Four very zealous friends ripped the roof off of a house to get their paralyzed friend to Jesus. Y'all, everybody remembers that story. They lift him down because they was talking and everything. Man, he needed help. And so they knew Christ could help. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably a standing room only type situation. Probably a lot better than any concert you could ever go to, that's for sure. Mark, that was in Mark 2, 1 through 5, that talks about that. Now, have you ever thought about, and I'm bad about raising hands, you don't have to, who are your four most zealous friends? Have you thought about that? Four most zealous friends that you have. Everybody's quiet. I want you to think about that. Among your other family or friends, in whom would you most likely would like to pass on greater zeal to? Did you know someone that you're close to, but they're not very zealous? They're just on a downer all the time. Carla, why are you doing that frown at me? Oh, you're listening. Okay. I said something about being down, and all of a sudden Carla frowns, you know. I didn't know you was acting out what I was talking about here. But you see my point, what I'm getting at. We got to think of in terms of how we can continue to build each other up. And by helping someone else, they're going to help us too. Okay? It's a continual thing. It said a man's home is his what? What's that old saying? A man's home is, huh? Castle. Okay. How about this twist? Think about this. How about Christians would be much better off with fewer castles and more arcs. Okay? More arcs. Ark. Noah's Ark. The big ark. Now, I say that, and somebody might say, whoa, I would like to have an ark for a home and not a castle, because they're probably bigger than a castle. So anybody's been up and saw the replication of the ark up in Kentucky, yeah, it's pretty big. But anyhow, the Hebrews 11:7 says, Noah in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. God's not calling, God's not calling you to build a big boat or a ship or whatever you want to call the ark to rise above the flood, but he's calling all of us to build a household that rises above the evil in this world, like a spiritual ark. Okay? Let's think in that term for me a little bit. Every zealous Christian, single or married, parent or not a parent, needs to build his household as an ark. That means constructing it by God's blueprints. That's what Noah did. He used God's blueprints. Filling it with God's precious cargo, depending on God's promises. And Noah, he demonstrated great zeal in building the ark. How many years did he work on building that ark? Anybody remember? A century. Took him a century. You know, most of us will never live to be a century old to start off with. But a century, him and his sons worked on building that ark. And their wives did too, in preparing meals for them and helping in whatever ways they could. But a century of doing that. Now, oh, it had to be. Right. But you know, at the same time, that's true, but at the same time, you know, his family were helping him. Okay, he couldn't do it alone, that's for sure. They were helping him. So they were going through the same thing. We don't read of that about that. It's always Noah, but the entire family's being mocked and called crazies, you know, at the same time here. Now here's a big question here. A century of working on this ark. Do you think that Noah ever got bored? That his sons came by and just saw Dad just you know, he's in a catatonic state, kind of staring at whatever, and he was bored. What do y'all think on that? I don't think so. Well, you be kind of down, like, but still. He knew because of his faith, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So at that period of time, the thought was they had never seen rain. Okay, when you start talking about a flood, they hadn't seen rain. There's a mist. It was a heavy mist is what watered everything. So so they hadn't really had the violent rains that we see down here on the Gulf Coast. Seem like every week here lately, but anyhow, so there's a lot of factors.
Yeah.
God first. Yeah. John? Well, you had Enoch, yeah. So, but still, it had to be tough on them. There's no doubt about that. But God gave him a blueprint, and he was following that blueprint. Are you following God's blueprint, which is his commands that we have in the New Testament, for building your house on the rock? Matthew 7:24. You probably notice I have the ones that I'm going to go over verses. It's on that little worksheet, and I'm listed, so in case you're wanting to look those up. God's precious cargo. Are you caring for one another and bringing the fruit of the Spirit into your actions? Okay? And then we got God's promises. Are you zealous enough to put your complete trust and faith in God? Do you take on extraordinary challenges to shine as a light in the world? Okay? Do you do that? I think we all do. We may not do as much as we maybe ought to be doing or that we can do at times, but that's where we sharpen each other, by helping each other stay on the top, okay? Remind each other, you know, to keep doing the best that we can. As you spread zeal throughout your home, every member of the family will find an important role to play in God's plan. And I know there may be some here that's home alone. I understand those things. But you still have interaction with church family and other friends and family at times. And so you can keep honing your skills even when you're out, even though you're not, when I say at home, have somebody right there with you. Like the Ark's, zealous households aren't built overnight, but they can be built one day at a time. Okay? One day at a time. You know, we're told to take things, don't worry. Take things day by day. You know, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will be here. You know, he takes care of the lilies of the field, the sparrows, and all those, everything else. Everything goes in a cycle. One thing way back I learned from my dad was, and also I learned this from Bill Jr., don't get in a hurry. Things, if you just lay low, things many times will work themselves out. I'm 10 years ago, got to know Bill talking, and Bill talked me into coming on the field. That's when he was at Sterling. I guess he was Sterling most all that time. Football field, and help him. Ah, that was the biggest mistake I ever made in my life. Because I go in that field, and my mind is only thinking about all the malpractice type scenarios that could happen because I'm on the field, okay? Because, you know, we're trained to look at those type of things and beware of them. People not wanting to work but just sue doctors or sue this one or that one, or grocery stores having slip and falls, all that bit. But I learned a vital thing from Bill. Don't get in a hurry. He'd tell me, somebody goes down the field and you hear them crying over, they're just carrying on all the way across the field. And I look at Bill. Bill's just in there watching. He's just watching. And I said, Bill, aren't we going out there? I said, nah, let's give it a little bit. Then he'll take a few steps, and I was kind of following him. Coaches have now barreled off the benches. They're all out there on the side, from the sidelines on the field. And Bill said, "Oh, he'll be up in a minute. You know, he'll stop." And sure enough, all of a sudden, he's up, runs off the side to the sideline. Bill looked at him and said, "He wasn't hurt." Patience, patience. Okay, we have to develop a patience that things will be okay, and don't jump into something before you've analyzed it and checked it over and go and do what is godly and correct. Okay, and that's where sometimes people jump into things with family drama, and they're not being patient watching this scenario, watching what's going on. Just some thoughts there. For your zeal to last, you must forge friendships with fellow Christians. You're not going to have a good friend. And I'm reminded of this. Saturday I went to a class reunion. Old high schoolers. And I learned a few new things again every time I go to one of those things. I don't go to too many of them. That on graduation night, I learned that this group went off and had a big beer bus drunk and got drunk all night. This other group went off with hard liquor night drinking and type stuff. And me, well, I won't tell you what I was doing. I was still part of three of us stealing the D off of the auditorium thing that they hang up there. We did not break in. We stayed and never left, and we got it. And then I just went home, you know. And I was just shocked. I had no idea these people went off, you know, getting drunk. But anyhow, so a lot of times you got to forge friendships with fellow Christians. If you have a friend that you love to be around, you maybe fish with or hunt with, but they like to always have a six-pack or two with them, you might need to try to forge another friendship someplace, because they're liable to start pulling you down. You gotta, you know, it's that thing. A lot of times people get with somebody when they're young thinking, I can make them better. I can convert them. Most of the time we know that doesn't work. The Christian gets pulled down and still pulling them up. We have to be so careful about that stuff. Regular participation in worship services, lectures, youth camps, group meetings, you know, other things where Christians get together, playing these cards, dominoes, you know, all those things. They help the Christian family. They help you with your friends, because you're with peers of like faith is what it is. And you will get groups together like that, the like faith turns into a fire many times, because you're just so encouraged. At least you should be. Look for friends whose zeal for God challenges you to live even more courageously and selflessly. By choosing friends who share a common passion for the Lord will enhance each other's spiritual fires. 1 Samuel 18:1. Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. That's two very good friends there. Very good friends. Even though Jonathan's dad did not like David. Joshua's zeal for the Lord spread among his family, his friends, and ultimately the entire nation. When he declared what? Y'all know this. I know y'all know this. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Okay? And that Joshua at the time probably never knew that, you know, that what he said is going to be used in sermons and classes, you know, for, I guess, eternity, okay? Because he is so correct there. You know, we got to make a stand and be strong with it. Everyone knew his convictions and his determination. And that's what it should be with us. You know, if somebody says something about another person, say, oh, don't worry about them. You know, they're strong. They're strong for the Lord because you know their conviction and their determination. I'm telling y'all things you already know. This is just all reminder stuff today. In the earthly family of Jesus, oh boy, his siblings, what do they think of Christ? Thought he's what? Or crazy like Noah? Yeah. What is wrong with brother? Yeah. He's our eldest brother, but what is wrong with him? Yeah. He's not making good sense. You know, we've never heard this before. You know there's talking about him behind his back and a whole bit. Okay. Right.
You can go to the furthest reaches of the world and people will hail you as beyond belief, but the second you come home, people are going to criticize you like, we know who you come from, who are you to tell us?
Yeah, that's so correct. It's just a fact that's going to be that way because people still remember Christ as that little boy and that young man that helped dad you know, build things, be a carpenter. So it's the same thing. So when he declared, as for me and my house, we would serve the Lord, everybody knew where Joshua was at. For Christ, his family thought he was crazy. But despite all their criticisms, he stood firm because he knew he was the Messiah. Eventually, the zeal that burned within his heart spread to the rest of his family. But it took time. He had to have patience with them, okay? Even when it's unpopular with those closest to you, we got to be firm and steadfast. We got to stay on the course. Steadfast in your zeal for the Lord. Mark 3:20-21. And he came home, and the crowd gathered again to such an extent that they could not even eat a meal. When his own people heard of this, they went out to take custody of him, for they were saying, he has lost his senses. Then John 7:3-5. Therefore, his brothers said to him, leave here and go into Judea, so that your disciples also may see your works, which you are doing. For no one does anything in secret when he himself seeks to be known publicly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world, for not even his brothers were believing in him. Sad, very sad, that situation. You must live out and require high moral standards in your home. Is that a hand up there? I mean, are you wanting me to be quieter? Or? Okay.
But that's also why Christ gives two pieces of advice for sayings that he gives. The first being when his family comes to him in the house and his followers are like, hey, your brothers and sisters are here outside. And so his mother. And he tells them, who's my mother? Who's my brother?
and that can happen very definitely. And he's warning everybody that if you're in that situation, he knows what you're going through, very definitely. But we have to live out and require high moral standards in our home. Some of the biggest things have changed so much in society, and y'all know this. Somebody was talking with me here a while back about the, we were actually born at a good time. We've seen a lot of advancements, but we saw the simple part of life, and now we see the rat race of life. We've seen how people would go on a Sunday afternoon and go visit from house to house and that type of stuff, to the point to where people just don't get together much, okay? So it's been a lot of changes, but some of the biggest changes that creates problems in a household is with the electronic devices, okay? People getting that internet is one of the worst things that probably has ever invented. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Satan's behind it all, type situation. But it's we have to know how to control that. And if people have the younger children, it's a battle. It is a battle in each family. Okay. I think I'm being waved at in the back here. So we'll pick up from there next time. I hope everybody got something out of the class today. Remember, like I told Lillian, smile. Usually you get a smile back, okay? Thank y'all.